Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you very much.
No.
You're very kind. No, I'm not through. No, I'm just starting, Jack. Thank you. This surprised me, too, boy.
Boy, you sure know how to hurt a fella, Dean.
I got my shorts on backwards. No, a drink. Drink. Now, this is only a gag. I don't drink anymore. I freeze it now, and I eat it like a popsicle. But you just remember, you know, a drink never hurt nobody at all. You just remember the great words of Mr. Joey Lewis. He says, "You're not drunk if you can lay on the floor without holding on."
How would you know?
Joey and I were together at my home about 2 weeks ago. We were in my den one morning, swimming, and he mixed himself a peculiar drink, and I said, "What are you drinking down there, Joe?" And he looked down at me. He said, "Scotch and carrot juice." Yeah, I said, "Why?" He said, "I get drunk, but I see good." But, you know, I want to say one thing in all seriousness. I feel sorry for you people that don't drink. I mean it, because when you wake up in the morning, that's as good as you're going to feel all day.
Absolutely. I don't know about that, but if Dino says it, it's got to be. That was completely the wrong opener. It's not what I thought it was going to be at all, so I apologize for that. James Bostic, A Conservative's Perspective, here on Patriot Nation Radio at blogtalkradio.com. We do it live twice a week, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have a recorded version of the program that comes on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Mojo50.com. Well, I hope everybody had a terrific Thanksgiving. I hope it was blessed. I hope it was safe and happy. I hope that it was bountiful. You know, some places of the country, because of these, the supply chain issues and crises Pete Buttigieg, our Secretary of Transportation, has been on some kind of baby-related leave. Maternal leave, paternal. Who nurses in that couple? Let's not even get there. But anyway, he's been busy taking 3 weeks of family leave and not doing a damn thing about these 160, probably 170 plus by now, container ships that are just stacked up in San Diego, in the bay in San Diego. And some people were hurting. Some places, because of these supply chain issues, you know, prices were off the chart if you could find anything at all. We were lucky here in the mountain state where I live, didn't have any problems like that. And we had a terrific Thanksgiving. Some things, though, in anticipation of that, I kind of got a little bit worried, because you never know. And I went ahead and bought a few things, like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ahead. What could be frozen? The drumsticks, the turkey breast, that sort of thing, the potatoes. So, but we had a great time. My brother and his family came over. Mom is, that was Kool-Aid. Mom is 87. Be 88, I think, this, I think she'll be 88 this coming May. She had a terrific time. In excellent health, the only thing that would keep her from living another 10 years is probably me. But she had a good time. Everybody did, and I hope you guys did as well. Here shortly, I'm hoping he's going to call in a little bit, our guest, The Honorable Judge Hal Morose from the great state of Georgia will be joining us and speaking on a number of issues, from matters conservative to issues of the Constitution. And it all starts right now, or as soon as he calls in. You know, I've been watching and observing, even though I didn't fully understand it, politics, the news, this sort of thing that we do here, that Don Newman, Donna Fiducia do, that El Guapo does, that our pal Gary Benn, United Patriots Uprising, people. On all the platforms, you don't want to miss it. You simply just don't want to miss it. A-listers all the way. Gary Benford, United Patriots Uprising. Don't forget that name. Don't forget his name. Don't forget the name of the show. As soon as you get done here, go check it out. United Patriots Uprising. This guy's great. He's absolutely great. So, what were we talking about? Oh, I've been watching this stuff for a long time. I mean, I was I can remember just like a current events junkie from the time I was in elementary school up till now, and I'm going to be turning 76, 78, something like that here in August. So I've been doing it a long time. And I thought in retrospect, because I was just a wee little, I was born in 1962, and I was 7, 8, 9 years old when the, you know, we come to the end of the 60s and the early 70s. And the town I lived in was a small, button-down little burg, southern West Virginia. Pretty conservative, pretty straight-laced. And the hippies, man, the hippies and the left and their message and all that stuff, you know, it's just like it sprung up. And these demonstrations are all over the place and the riots. The Summer of Love, you guys remember the Summer of Love 2 years ago? I think, objectively, and everybody talks about the political strife and the turmoil of the mid, late 1960s, early 1970s, and they're right. It was in many, many places in the United States, just as today. It was a very divisive, very contentious time, and I would say if we give weight to try and balance, do a little handicapping here, if possible. In those days, you had three networks reporting the news. And any of your local channels, you know, were invariably going to be an affiliate of one of those big three, CBS, ABC, NBC. That was it. That was it. And when we look at today, we have those three. We have CNN, MSNBC. We have C-SPAN. We have Fox News. We have public broadcasting. We have any number of independent information organizations. In some cases, I can't really say news, but you get the idea. And in terms of coverage, well, there really isn't any comparison. You know, you have 24-hour news networks. You can watch this stuff until it affects you psychologically, and I think a lot of people do. I know I'm guilty of it. I've let it affect me psychologically. And, you know, you got to step away from all that bad news because that's all it is. But back in that day, 6 o'clock evening news, 10:30 or 11 o'clock network news. Those were the two times you got it, or at noon. And that's all they talked about. Now, mind you, Hold on just a moment. I think that was the judge. Tell you what, guys, I'm going to play a little something here, and we'll be right back after this brief musical interlude. Let me find something long. And that was a little bit too long, but you never know how these technical issues can run. And I wanted to make sure we had enough airtime. We're back. Welcome once again. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective. Technical issues cleared up, and we're going to move along. Forget about all that junk I was saying beforehand. Excuse me. Whenever we have guests on this program, and it has long since been my commitment to you, the listener, whenever we have guests, because we're not necessarily a guest or caller-driven show, but when we do have those folks on, they're going to be people that I guarantee you are worthy of listening to. Tonight is no exception. He's been on the program before. He's a friend of the program, and he is a soldier, statesman, a jurist, author, a man of deep and abiding faith. Judge Hal Moroz is with us tonight, and he is long overdue for this, and I'm very, very happy to have him with us this evening. And we're going to be taking a look at a number of issues, from matters conservative to issues in the Constitution, states' rights, whatnot. We're going to get into the weeds. And I can't think of anybody to get into the weeds and follow than our guest this evening, His Honor, Judge Hal Moroz. Welcome, Judge. It's good to have you with us again.
Being here with you.
We're living, as I like to say, in interesting times. And one of the first things I would like to talk to you about this evening has to do, in a roundabout way, first and foremost, with the issue of states' rights. And that's been a burr, I think, in the constitutional blanket ever since it was put in there, versus the enumerated powers of the federal government. And what I'm thinking about is specifically what Governor Ron DeSantis is doing in terms of pushing back against federal edicts from Washington, D.C., and exercising his rights as chief executive of the state of Florida to make the best qualified decisions as what is in the best interests of their citizens.
Well, you know, Jim, I think of it this way. When I look at the Constitution, I look at a document that formed our country, and the document enumerates what the limits of power are for the government. And I think the Biden administration, I call it the Biden regime, actually, they have abused the power that was given to them under our Constitution. They're actually using our Constitution to destroy the Constitution. And by that, I mean Biden, by edict, is opening our borders, exposing Americans to harm, allowing really an invasion of our country. And the Constitution was never meant to be an instrument where the government can dictate and take away freedoms and rights of the citizens. And that's happened over the last 2 years, my friend, and your listeners know this. The government has chipped away at our freedom of speech, our freedom to assemble. For goodness sake, they're even talking about putting us under house arrest again, not for a crime, but for a manufactured political cudgel that they use to beat us up with. And that's that the Chinese virus, I'll call it in honor of President Trump, this COVID-19 is a never-ending saga for the government to take away our rights. And I'm glad we have governors like DeSantis in Florida and a few other courageous governors who are fighting this bold and unconstitutional power grab by our federal government. And it's a shame, but my friend, we're living in a time where our rights, our republic is at risk. And as Reagan said, you know, we're at risk of losing our rights from generation to generation. Unless we fight for them, these rights will soon be gone. And I believe they were God-given rights. I know you do, too. But we have a regime in Washington helped by Pelosi in the House of Representatives and Schumer in the Senate. They are chipping away at our rights. They are flooding Americans with illegals. And they are giving them, step by step, more rights than American citizens. They can travel here without a vaccine. They can travel here and even sue us. I know you heard of the story of the $450,000 settlements to these illegals crossing the border. But the truth of it is they are going to settle, and we'll never hear what those settlements amounts are. They could be $400,000. They could be $300,000. And I get concerned whenever I hear Biden, as he said, I believe yesterday, that we are not in danger of any lockdowns. You know, he has constantly said the opposite of what he means. And I fear that the federal government with Fauci is looking at another lockdown. Another excuse for power grab, maybe a national campaign to, you know, just send out election ballots and continue to shape these elections in the way they desire. And it's a shame, my friend.
And cheat by mail, by any other name, has been very, very effective for them. And they know that it works. It is my hope. And I say this a lot. The only thing that's going to save us and is an informed and disseminating electorate. That's the only thing that and that informed and disseminating electorate responding in such a cascade, in such an overwhelming amount that, you know, that shows these folks just exactly how serious we are about rebuking and refusing, rejecting this Marxist ideology. And you can say whatever you want. That's what this is. It's all leading to totalitarianism And when you have technical corporations, corporations involved in the internet and digital technologies, in computing, in algorithms, and they are willing to do the bidding of certain ideological factions in our country, like the folks who are in power right now, that is a frightening thing, and it is it's something I think that's very difficult to overcome. But one of the only ways I see clear as a pathway to that is, again, an informed and disseminating electorate doing the right thing and standing when they need to.
Yeah, you know, James, I think you hit the nail right on the head, and you said it very well. My prayer is that in 2022, we have such a rebuke of what is going on today that conservatives sweep the House of Representatives and the United States Senate and put an end to this nonsense. You know, this idea that the government, the federal government, knows all things and is our caretaker, it was never designed to be that. You know, it was always designed to be this institution that we never were very happy with, but we understood was necessary to provide for the common defense, for an army, to do those things the federal government would do per the Constitution. And by that, I mean a national dollar, a military fighting force, not this welfare state we've created. You know, I fear for my home state of Georgia because I think overwhelmingly our citizens are conservative, but there is a cabal, if you will, in the Atlanta area that has monopolized the art of manipulating the election. And we saw that in the election with President Trump.
You know, sure, on video we saw it,
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, I fear for Georgia in our future. You know, even Florida, when you consider that Ron DeSantis won by, you know, a very tiny margin. I'm talking about 10,000 votes plus. That's scary when you think of the future of our country.
Absolutely it is. And when I speak of a, you know, when I talk about an informed and disseminating electorate, it's not just in identifying those policies which are harmful that are being put out by the left, which there's, you know, a panoply of them. There's no shortage of them. They go on forever. It's like shooting fish in a bucket to find a bad policy from the left. But it transcends that. You only have to be aware of that, but you have to look even more keenly at the Republicans that are being put in there, because, you know, there is such a thing as a rhino, and there are a lot of them in Washington, D.C.
Yes, and didn't President Trump really expose these folks? You know, the ones who promise everything and deliver on virtually nothing. You know, for all of President Trump's faults, and I'm sure he had faults, but you know what? He kept his promises, and he delivered. He gave us a conservative Supreme Court, I hope, and he gave us a military that was, you know, backed up not only with equipment, but with, you know, the support of the American people. He stood in the gap for our law enforcement community. He did so many positive things for life, for crying out loud. I don't think we've had a better advocate for America's working families and the cause of Christ than we did with President Trump in my time. And I love President Reagan, but I'll tell you, President Trump was the right man at the right time. He came in, no nonsense. He made the federal government do its job. And, you know, for all of the talk of the vaccine and what have you, he put them to work to deliver a product in lightning fast speed, what he called, you know, warp speed. And he did that. And he shook the government to the point where he was hated by the Democrats and the establishment Republicans, hated. But the American people loved him. Our military loved him. I love them. And we need that type of leadership once again. But we have to stem this tide of evil that's really possessed America in these last 10 months. Biden is a failure and a disaster. We're talking about 50 years of corruption, James, and it's all come to fruition with him sitting in the Oval Office. What a national disgrace.
I couldn't agree more. And you're right. It has been a career of doing nothing beyond enriching himself and his family on the American citizens' nickel. He is beholden to our enemies in a way that we probably will never, ever fully be aware of. And I can't think of anybody who is a more dangerous threat to the United States than our enemies domestic right now, because it seems as though they're working almost in concert with our enemies foreign. And it worries me.
I agree.
I knew that you wouldn't, and it worries me because, and I'm sure that you sense it too, we see little mushrooms of encouragement popping up throughout the country. Loudoun County, Virginia, for example, the firestorm that went on there, and look what happened when those parents mobilized. They sent Terry McAuliffe packing. And that was a big deal. That was significant.
I agree. It was, you know, I think you're right. When American families unite, you know, when we get back to those principles of family, love of country, you know, a sense of right and wrong, we have a press that has sabotaged America. And this was never the press that our founders envisioned. Our founders respected and protected the press because the press was supposed to be this communication platform that spoke truth, facts to the American people, regardless of party or affiliation, just facts. We no longer have that type of press corps. You know, we have MSNBC, we have CNN, which are just propaganda arms of the far left, the Democrat Party. If President Trump, this always amazed me, the press and the Democrats accused President Trump of the things they did. And what were they? Like Hillary Clinton colluding with the Russians to come up with this dossier. How about Biden's son and the laptop and how that was glossed over? How about all of the wrongs perpetrated by the Democrats in office? You know, Truman said, you know, you show me a politician that gets rich in office and I'll show you a crook. And that's what we have today. Politicians who are careerists, and I hate saying this, but political prostitutes, that's all they do. They will tell you whatever you want to get your vote and they will not deliver on that. And isn't it funny, James, that we elected a businessman in 2016? And he did a job, I think, better than any politician in our time could do to straighten out some of these things. But the problem is, my friend, and Reagan said it well, you know, he said at the end of his second term in office that the one problem and regret he had was not institutionalizing conservatism. He did not institutionalize it in our schools. In our education platforms. And what we have are education platforms that are with this whole brand new philosophy of this critical race theory and right is wrong and wrong is right, destroying our heritage, taking down, you know, the statues to Thomas Jefferson. These movements created during Obama's reign, Black Lives Matter and what have you. I mean, you really want to do something for the black populations in America? How about close down the crack houses in America? Have you seen any protests there? You know, have you seen any protests that you have invaders coming into America, taking American jobs, trespassing on American lands, and living off of this land through fraud, pretending that they're citizens when they're not? That's a problem. And we're now granting voter rights to these folks in New York and California. Never meant to be this way. And we have Pelosi in Congress who's trying to nationalize our elections. So they're always in favor of the Democrats. It is a scary time, my friend. And I really am concerned about great patriots like yourself with this program who I say to myself, how long will you be in existence? You know, if things are not changed in 2022 and 2024, I think our days are numbered. And, you know, but for the few people who are vocal on this, most people are not out there protesting. The good people are not out there looting. They're not out there starting fires. They're working. They're providing for their families.
Exactly.
They don't have time for this nonsense. But you know what? And James, you always do this to me, my friend. You get me on my horse here. But we have a problem in America. You are right. It's going to take, like what happened in Virginia, people looking at each other around the table and saying, you know what, Terry McAuliffe is not the future. He's the past, big government past. And what we need are new ideas that empower families, that empower parents. That's what we need in America. We don't need politicians. We need Americans.
One of the things you just spoke about, Judge, in terms of talking about the political prostitution of the left in promising everyone everything and delivering nothing, I have a feeling, and we're not going to hear about it in the news, at least not in the mainstream of the establishment media, but I have made this prediction for a while, and I'm not exactly sure when it'll break loose, but I feel that it will. The left has played such a tremendous, all-encompassing focus on, I don't necessarily want to say diversity, but rather identity politics. And they pander. You've seen it. I've seen it. We all have. They pander shamelessly from one group to the next. And at some point, these groups are going to say, okay, we've given you our support. You're on your third term. We want our cut. Where is our chair? We want to be, you know, we're tired of sitting at the kids' table. We want a grown-up chair. And they're not going to be able to deliver this. And what are these groups? The Antifa, the BLMs, the OBGYNs, the LGBTs, whatever, you know, however many of the letters of the alphabet people have. Yeah, that they've co-opted. What are these folks going to do when they realize, and at some point they have to realize, you know, these guys are just lying to us. And I'm just wondering as to how volatile that mixture is going to be within the Democrat Party in terms of the extremists with the Squad and AOC and those of their ilk and whatever may be left of what we might consider center left.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're pushing the envelope. And, you know, the one thing that the Democrats have on their side is they are willing to lie at the drop of a hat. You know, you catch them doing something like hypocrites. And that, for example, a year ago, President Trump was lambasted for stopping or banning travel from China and parts of
Africa. Exactly.
Keeping out that pestilence out of our country. And the media and Biden and Harris and the Congress went off on him, xenophobic, racist, all of this. And in the past week, isn't it funny, on Monday, Biden bans 8 African countries, and the media is silent. Congress is silent. All of the hypocrites are saying, wow, what a great idea that he would be bold enough to do that. We have right now somebody sitting in the Oval Office who I fear is not only unfit, but he is such a tool of an unknown political narrative. Who is directing this guy? because he certainly does not project the ability to think on his feet or to answer simple questions from the press, which is only going to give him softball questions. He can't even field those questions. That's pretty alarming, James. And this is the state of affairs in America. China is laughing at us. Russia is laughing at us. Our enemies never had it so good. You know, we have armed the Taliban better than over 150 countries around the world. They now have state-of-the-art American military hardware, courtesy of Joe Biden and company, that they're parading and sharing with communist China, Russia, Iran. And we still have Americans sitting in Afghanistan who were left behind by this president, who called it the best airlift in the history of America. An airlift of what? Most of the people who were airlifted out of Afghanistan in that panic that cost 13 American lives and maimed so many more, this guy has just filled those planes with unvetted folks, not U.S. citizens, not people who fought alongside America, but folks just wanting to get out of there. And I don't know if you've read the highlights. I'm sure you have, the headlines around the country, that these people are now committing crimes in America, the unvetted ones, that is. And
yeah, they're causing a lot of problems.
Yes, sir. And this is in addition to those flooding across our southern border, MS-13, human traffickers, drug smugglers. And this is open season on enter America and take everything you can. And we can't be sustained. Even Obama says we can't be a nation very long without borders. Obama, for crying out loud. We have to change this government next year.
It was Michael Savage. The three things that define a nation or a country are its borders, its language, and its culture.
Yes.
And without those three, without the structural integrity of a clearly defined border and the means to protect and enforce that border, we're sunk. Without a common language, without a common touchstone for us to communicate one to the other with, we're sunk. And we have this dilution of our culture. And I'm not speaking from a racist standpoint. I'm speaking from an American standpoint. American culture is very unique in terms, and a lot of that is directly attributable to those ordered liberties that we were given by the founders. But, you know, you talk about the news, look at the sick, incestuous, convoluted relationship between government and the news. Chris Cuomo and his murdering brother, Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo's, you know, Chris is trying to use his influence and contacts to assist his brother in covering up and whitewashing the fact that he killed almost 17,000 New Yorkers and acted like a creep with all the women on his staff.
Absolutely. And
that's just one small example. Yeah, that's
yes.
just one small example. Ben Rhodes, Obama's speechwriter, was his brother, I think, was director of CBS News during the Obama administration. They're just example, one after the other of this kind of thing. And they're locked in so tight. And it's going to be through the alternative media, folks like Don Newen and Donna Fiducia. And I'm going to humbly throw myself in there, but there are
great people. As you should, my friend, as you should. James, you are doing a great job, my friend, and a great service. You know, you have kept faith with our founders. And my friend, I love you for that. And I know your listeners love you for that as well. You've kept in touch with the founders' intent with a love of our history. You know, and if your listeners have not seen you on Facebook, I strongly encourage them to get on there. You are one of my highlights, my friend, whenever I peruse those pages of Facebook. Love what you do, love what you stand for, and, you know, proud that we have people like you who kept faith with our founders.
Kind words, Judge, and I appreciate that very much. You've always been kind and gracious to the program, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I appreciate tremendously the time that you give to the program as well. And it's through your messages, and I know you're probably pressed for time, but before you leave, let's talk about your book.
My friend, I'll tell you what, I'm a believer. I know you are as well. It's like, this country, I believe, was founded by people who were inspired by God. They put down in words, our God-given rights as citizens. And we've strayed from that. We've strayed from the Constitution. We've strayed from that core of decency that defined us as Americans. My book is called The Long Way Home. The Long Way Home, and the subtitle is Returning America to Our Founding Christian Principles. James, I don't think we can move forward unless we appreciate what we have and are willing to fight for what we have. And we can only do that by understanding that the Constitution is just simply a document that organizes our government between a state-run government and a federal government, and they are divided for a reason. And they're organized in the Constitution, but the Constitution also gives us rights that the federal government and many states have taken from us in these last 2 years since COVID began. And those rights are, like I said, freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, freedom to do things that only Americans can do, and not be subject to a house arrest without a charge of a crime, which is what's going on here. You know, this is the first time in our history, perhaps history of the world, where people who are not sick are being ordered to be locked up. And this ruse that says, well, you know what, even if you have the vaccine, you can still spread it. So if you don't have the vaccine, you're spreading it as well. The Democrats have gone out of their way to divide us and confuse us. If you listen to Fauci, he talked out of both sides of his mouth. You don't need a mask. You do need a mask. You need a shot. You don't. You need a shot. You need two shots. Two shots is not enough. How about a booster every 6 months? They're free right now. It reminds me of people who deal in drugs. You know, it's like your first two hits are free, then you're going to pay for it once we got
right.
And that's what's going to happen because, Uncle Sam is going to run out of those funds to give you free vaccinations, and that's going to be the standard of doing this. And we're lulled into this sort of like the frog in the pot of water that's, the fire's turned on underneath. It slowly begins to boil, and before you know it, that frog is dead in there. That's where we are in America right now, and we need an awakening. And that's what my book's about, The Long Way Home. We need to appreciate the godly foundation of our country. We made big mistakes in the last century. We took prayer out of public schools. We even took the Ten Commandments out. The Supreme Court wound up taking out the Ten Commandments of the public in the public schools by saying, students might look upon those documents and they might act upon them. Really, like thou shalt not steal, right? Thou shalt not commit murder. All of these things which are foundational to a civilized society. The Ten Commandments are the basis of our civil and criminal codes as well. And we've removed God from the picture. And I think about this time of year, Christmas is approaching, and all the nuts are going to come out saying, you can't have a nativity scene. Let's not call it Christmas. Let's call it winter break or something like that. No, it's Christmas. And then the first word in there is Christ. It's a Christian time of year. It's a time where we look at our Judeo-Christian foundings and we appreciate what we have, the gifts we have. And I know you believe this, James. You know, we are blessed to be Americans. But, you know, if we don't fight to preserve it, we're going to lose it. And that's why I wrote this book, to sort of have people wake up on it. And I do encourage people, even this time of year, to get it. You know, it just any bookstore, your favorite bookstore, The Long Way Home, and it's by me, Hal Moroz. That's M-O-R-O-Z. You can look it up, Google it, and order it for your family. It makes a great Christmas gift. And my friend, I'm just proud and blessed that I'm able and have the privilege to write something about our godly founding and not have it burnt in the public square by the government or, you know, or agents of the government. And I fear we're approaching that as we talk about COVID, having papers that prove we're vaccinated. Sort of reminds me of Germany in the mid-1930s. And I don't want that for this country at all. And I know you don't, and your listeners don't want that either. But this is, you know, this is my life based on what I've done. You know, I ran for the Georgia Supreme Court last year. I fell short in that election. But you know what? We did a lot of good things. A incumbent justice has never lost their seat in Georgia. And I attempted to remove a sitting justice who I believe has strayed from the Constitution, not only of the U.S. government, but of the state of Georgia. And I fell short in that. But you know what? Every time we do something, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. That's what Sun Tzu, the ancient Chinese philosopher, said in The Art of War. And I believe that. You know, we have to take a step. And I encourage your listeners, get involved in your community at any level and vote and encourage others to vote on principled stands. America first. The Constitution is written. Let's get back to the America of our founders that they intended, you know, one where we're proud of who we are. And this whole notion, James, of I should be repentant because I'm white or I should feel oppressed because I'm black, which is this new, you know, critical race theory. You know what? Never apologize for what God made you. Your immutable characteristic, whether you're white or black, it doesn't matter. God made you that way. Appreciate that. Appreciate the gift of life because you never have to apologize or get on your knees for what God gave you as an immutable characteristic. There are only two genders, male and female. You know, you cannot, and all of these liberals who cry, let's go with the science, they don't when it comes to things that run afoul of their own narrative. And we need to get back to the basics because we've strayed, my friend, and I'm glad you're a voice for reason out there.
Those are some kind words, Judge, and I really appreciate the fact that you do take time to come on the program and talk with the listeners, and I always enjoy speaking with you. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking again, soldier, statesman, jurist, author, man of deep and abiding faith, the quintessential American, if you would, Judge Hal Moroz from the great state of Georgia. Thank you very much, Your Honor. I appreciate it again, you coming on, and I hope that we will not make it quite so long before we get you back in here.
You got it, James. And to you and yours and your listeners, Merry Christmas to all of you, and please pray for America, my friends.
Merry Christmas to you and yours, Judge, and God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. A pleasure, and the honor is all mine.
We'll be talking soon. Thank you, Judge. Wow. That was fantastic. Judge Hal Moroz, man. What a great guy. And, you know, he's written a number of books, but this is his latest one, The Long Way Home. And I'm about halfway through it. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it on Kindle. You can, like I said, your local bookstores will have it. Check it out. Get it. Maybe get two. As one, as a gift, but he writes fundamentally as he speaks. So it's very easy to follow. It's a very entertaining. It's not even that long, but it's I think 150 some pages, and it lines out neatly and concisely what we as Americans, not white Americans, not Latino Americans, not African Americans, not we as Americans need to be a little more introspective and return to the roots of what it means to be simply an American. Not homogenized, not diverged, not filtered and separated, but Americans. And what's important to Americans? We want to be safe. Robert E. Lee once said, I just want to be left alone to eat my bread in peace. We want to raise our families. We want to provide for our kids. We want to make sure that maybe we leave them a little better or richer in some ways than we were. We want to make sure that they're taken care of. We want to make sure that they have a good, moral, decent education, an appropriate education, an education that's going to help them be good, productive citizens. These aren't big things. We're not wanting $450,000 in reparations. We're not wanting food allotments. We want the opportunity to do these things. It is that opportunity which is the equalizer. Now, what you do with that opportunity, well, that's up to you. And America is full. Our tapestry is woven with rags to riches stories from the time of Ben Franklin to Mike Lindell and all points in between. That was really great. That was really great. I enjoy having the judge on. He's a terrific guy. We will be back. I'm going to take a little break here, and we will be back with more of a conservative perspective after this brief musical interlude.
Excuse me. Have you ever been in Schenectady?
No. I've never been in Schenectady.
Neither have I. Must have been a couple other guys.
Everybody's gone away. Said they'll move into L.A. There's not a soul I know around. Everybody's leaving town. Some caught a freight, some caught a plane. Find the sunshine, leave the rain. They said this town will waste your time. I guess they're right, it's wasting mine. Some gotta win, some gotta lose. The damn Charlie's got the blues. The damn Charlie's got the blues. Telling me you're not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try and settle down, but everybody's leaving town. Some got a win, some got a lose. Good time, Charlie, got the blues. Good time, Charlie, got the blues. Good time, Charlie, got the blues.
Back a few months ago, I was headlining at a great big nightclub. And he put me up a couple of days early. I came in a couple of days early, and they put me up at what they call the Star Suite. Now, here I am, headliner in one of the biggest nightclubs in the country, and I wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning in this Star Suite, all by myself. Yeah, that's what I said, aw. But I did what I've always done, man, to cheer myself up. I picked up my guitar, I sat down, I wrote me a little song. Now this is how it feels to be alone at the top of the hill, trying to figure out why.
Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. I used to have a girlfriend, but I guess she just couldn't compete with all of these love-starved women who keep clamoring at my feet. Well, I probably could find me another, but I guess they're all in awe of me. Who cares? I never get lonesome, 'cause I treasure my own company. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble. You're perfect in every way. Can't wait to look in the mirror. Can't wait to look in the mirror.
Help me out now, come on.
I get better looking each day. To know me is to what? To know me is to love me.
Must be a hell of a man.
I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard. Lord, it's hard to be humble
when you're doing what?
We're doing the best that we can.
I guess you could say I'm a loner, a cowboy outlaw, tough and proud. Well, I could have lots of friends if I wanted, but then I wouldn't stand out from the crowd. Some folks say that I'm egotistical. Hell, I don't even know what that means. I guess it has something to do with the way that I fill out my skin tight blue jeans. Whoa.
Come on, where's all the kickers in here?
Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble
when you're perfect in every way.
When you're perfect in every way.
Can't wait to look in the mirror.
I can't wait to look in the mirror,
'cause I get better looking.
I get better looking each day.
To know me is to what?
To know me is to love me.
Must be a hell of a man.
Must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard. Lord, it's hard
What are we doing?
We're doing the best that we can.
One more time. What are we doing?
We're doing the best that we can.
Give yourself a hand.
Yeah, you know what? By God, it is. And I am. And that's really all I'm going to say about that. Welcome back. A Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio, blogtalkradio.com. We do it live a couple times a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a recorded incarnation of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, by damn you ought to be, because it is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. The Mojo50.com. Man, that was terrific. His honor, the judge is an awesome guy, as you can tell. And what a treat. You know, it's like Michael Cutler, or it's like Claire Lopez, or Trevor Loudon, or David Horowitz. Boy, I would like to have him back. What a smart guy. David Horowitz, yeesh, the brain. And all these people are incredibly intelligent. They're probably some of the leading thinkers and experts in their given fields of endeavor. And we're fortunate, folks. I'm not going to lie to you. We're fortunate to have these. And you know what? Cutler, for instance, Mike Cutler, my buddy. I love me some Mike. You know, he's an A-lister all the way, and he is gracious and generous with his time. He goes on David Webb, or he goes on Fox News, or he goes here or there, he goes on One American News. His star is in the ascendancy, once again, in terms of matters concerning the border. Probably the country's foremost expert on the border and border-related issues in terms of immigration, Michael Cutler. And he hangs out with us for 2 hours at a whack and has a ball. You know, usually I understand how busy some of these folks are. So 20, 30 minutes is really, I think, more than generous on everybody. Case in point, the judge, 45 minutes. They go on a big show like Hannity, or they go on any of the heads on Sirius XM, 8, 12 minutes. That's it. You have this tremendous, huge wealth fountain. You know, this spring of information in front of you or on the phone that you're talking with, you got access to. 12 minutes. 12 minutes doesn't prime Michael. Mike Cutler's, he hasn't even inhaled the second time in 10 minutes, 12 minutes. You know, and one of the things I try to do, I really do, and this is no joke, because of that, because I see that all the time, and I'll see a guest, or, you know, they'll have a contributor on a show, and it's somebody that's compelling or it really piques your interest, and then they got to go. They're out, and they're moving on to, you know, Steve Doocy with what to do with all that leftover turkey. Yeah. So my philosophy, my way of thinking is give them the time. I've got 2 hours here, or, you know, and an hour on Thursday. I've got 2 hours wide open, random neural firings on Tuesdays. I've got an hour on Thursday. The Sunday show is pre-recorded, but I can take important things that I've, you know, segments from guests from the live show, and I can put them on there and do that as well. Give them the time that they want. It's an injustice to somebody like David Horowitz to get him on national TV for 12 piddly minutes. And it's an insult to him, if you ask me. And so, you know, my philosophy, give them all the time they want. If you, you know, give them all the time I have. I just make it available to them. And with someone like Trevor Loudon, who I got to make some outreach to him. It's been a couple of years since he's been on the show, and I need him. He wrote a book called Enemies Within. And it was followed up by one called Reds in the White House, which was more of a 2019, 2020 look at the communist affiliations of the Democrat presidential candidates. From Pete Buttigieg to Amy Klobuchar to Cory Booker. Reds, man, they're all commies. Enemies Within is about a 700-page book, probably the last word. And again, Trevor Loudon, America's foremost authority on communist infiltration in the United States government from the 1930s on. What, you going to give him 10 minutes? You're going to turn him loose in 10 minutes and that's it? That book was one of the most exhaustive, thorough exposés on communism in America's government. It's all open sourced. It's all there that I've ever read. 10 minutes. Again, it's an insult. Same thing with Claire Lopez. Same thing with any of the guests that I bring on. I promise you, these guys, and that's why I let, you know, and in that respect, I think that we have been blessed that these folks have been so generous with their time and their knowledge, their information. I had this set up last week when the word came down, as it should have, in a case that never should have went to trial. Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty on all counts because he wasn't guilty of anything. And I'm not going to second guess because, you know, and what bothers me is some of these people will qualify it because, maybe he shouldn't have been there. It wasn't the smartest thing. He didn't break any laws. That was his community. He could do what he wanted to do. He's an American citizen. God damn it. And these people shouldn't be second guessing. He was found not guilty. He did no wrong. Oh, man. I wanted to ask the judge about the prosecutorial misconduct. I'm going to play a song and call him back. No, we're going to give him a break tonight. He was more than generous with us. Now, what did I have that under? So last week, this young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, spoke with Tucker Carlson, and it's a good interview. We're going to go ahead and play that if I can find it. It's about 17 minutes again. You know how I am about this, but better to hear them with their words. Better to hear their words coming out of their own big fat mouths than to me to half-ass paraphrase it. Tucker Carlson, Kyle Rittenhouse from last week. This is good.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. In retrospect, it's remarkable just how dishonest, how thoroughly and intentionally dishonest the media coverage of the Kyle Rittenhouse story turned out to be. All of it was a lie. Rittenhouse was not a white supremacist. He was never in a militia. He never crossed state lines with a firearm. The protest in Kenosha was not peaceful. It was a riot, chaotic and violent. Many of the rioters, by the way, carried guns. Rittenhouse was hardly alone. Rittenhouse didn't go to Kenosha looking for trouble. His father lived there. Rittenhouse himself worked as a lifeguard in Kenosha. On August 25th of last summer, Rittenhouse went downtown to stand guard over a car lot. Here's the context. The night before, police in Kenosha had done nothing as the mob burned businesses, including another car lot, all the way to the ground. So the business owner needed Kyle Rittenhouse's help. He was looking to a 17-year-old for help, if that gives you some perspective on how bad things were, and he asked for it. As Rittenhouse stood there, rioters threatened his life. Then they attempted to kill him. In the end, Rittenhouse shot three attackers as he tried to run to the safety of the police. A number of media outlets claimed the men Rittenhouse shot were black. In fact, all three were white, and all three had serious criminal records. We could go on. Again, the media coverage was, from beginning to end, a tapestry of lies. If you watched the trial last week, you know that. But what about Kyle Rittenhouse himself? What is he like? Apart from his testimony in court, few Americans have ever heard his voice. Over the next hour, we're going to let Kyle Rittenhouse speak for himself. You can make up your own mind what you think. But before we start, one observation, which you can't resist making. It's hard to ignore the yawning class divide between Kyle Rittenhouse and his many critics in the media. Rittenhouse comes from the least privileged sector of our society. During high school, he worked as a janitor and a fry cook to help support his family. Last year, he got into college at Arizona State, and he's very proud of it. In the world Kyle Rittenhouse grew up in, it is not a given that kids go to college. It's not even close. During the course of our long conversation, Kyle Rittenhouse struck us as bright, decent, sincere, dutiful, and hardworking. Exactly the kind of person you'd want many more of in your country. He's not especially political. He never wanted to be the symbol of anything. Kyle Rittenhouse just wanted to keep violent lunatics from setting fire to cars. In the America he grew up in, that was considered virtuous. So if Rittenhouse seems a little bewildered at points during our interview, thinking back over the last year and what happened to him, that's probably why. A lot of the things he assumed were true about this country turned out not to be true at all. So in that way, he speaks for many of us. Here's Kyle Rittenhouse. So tell me, Kyle, how you wound up in Kenosha that day.
Well, it actually started on August 24th. I was working my job as a lifeguard at the Recplex in Kenosha County, and then the riots were still going on and a curfew was implied. So I went to Dominic Black's house and I stayed the night over there and saw the videos of the riots and the arson going on.
What'd you think of it?
It was upsetting because Kenosha is my community, and I just was upset seeing my community up in flames.
Yeah, I bet you were. So you're at your friend's house that night. You've come back from working as a lifeguard.
Yes.
And then you decide to go in. First, you're cleaning up graffiti, correct?
Yes. So we stay the night, August 24th. We wake up in the morning and we're talking. We're like, let's go help our community. Let's go see what we can do. And we ended up at Ruther Central High School where we were cleaning graffiti for a couple hours. And then we met with the owners of Car Source and we offered to protect their business from fires, making sure the rest of their other two properties didn't get burned down like they did the night prior. And they agreed. We came back. We went back to Dominic's house and hung out there for a little bit. And then we went to Car Source to help protect the property and make sure it didn't set on fire again.
So you get there. What do you see?
When I get there, I see in the beginning, the morning of Ruther Central, I see just spray paint everywhere. I see smoke coming from the Car Source that was burnt down, and it was quite upsetting because that was somebody's business that got destroyed.
Yeah. So you said to the people who own the car lot, I want to protect your cars, and they said, yes, please.
I said, hey, if you, I asked if they needed any help, and they said, yes, if you can.
Where were the police?
I'm not sure, really, because they have a hard job.
For sure.
But I didn't really think they got the support they needed. The National Guard should have been called August 23rd, but the city of Kenosha failed the community. The governor, Tony Evers, failed the community, and there should have been a lot more resources to help with that.
That's for sure. So you've been criticized for carrying a firearm into the scene, but it's obvious from the tape that a lot of people, you were not the only one with a firearm. There are rioters with firearms. Was that obvious to you?
Yes.
So you saw other people with guns?
I did. There was a lot of people. There were rioters with firearms. I remember one very distinctly, Joshua Zeminski, was walking around with a pistol in his hand all that night with Joseph Rosenbaum.
Where did you first see Rosenbaum?
The first time I saw Rosenbaum was the first time he threatened to kill me. It was at the corner of the Car Source lot that I was at primarily that night, and I was asking people if they needed medical, and he came up to me and Ryan Balch, and he said, if I catch any of you MFers alone, I'm going to effing kill you.
Had you ever seen him before?
I have not.
So you've never seen this guy. He walks up and threatens to kill you out of nowhere.
Yes. It was quite shocking. I was like, why would somebody threaten to kill me? I'm just asking if people need help on both sides. I was there just to help anybody that needed it. And shockingly, the only people I helped that night were rioters.
What kind of sense did you get from Rosenbaum? I mean, that sounds deranged.
When he threatened to kill me, I was like, what the heck just happened? I've nobody's ever threatened to kill me up until that point. And I was like, that's not something you say to somebody.
How long after that was it that he tried to grab your rifle?
It was about an hour and a half later. And then there was actually a second time he said to the group, he said, this is the second time he threatened to kill everybody. He said, I'm gonna effing kill you. I'm going to cut your hearts out, you effing N-words.
Cut your hearts out?
Yes.
Did any of the rioters try and calm him down or stop him?
What I noticed is the rioters were trying to, like, they were, like, disassociating with him because he was, like, spewing the N-word around, and they just didn't seem to want to have anything to deal with him, the rioters.
Yeah. So he comes, he tries to grab your rifle, he gets shot, you decide at that point, listen, misremembering, you want to go turn yourself into the police.
Yes. After I shoot Mr. Rosenbaum, he tried to grab my gun. I was running away. There was a gunshot behind me. After I shoot him, I run around the car because I was going to go render first aid to him. I wasn't able to because then there was a mob forming and calling for my execution to get him and kill him. And that's when I try to run to the police line and get to the police. And then I am attacked again.
By the guy who kicked you?
By Jump Kick Man, yes.
Whose identity we didn't know. It turns out the prosecution knew it and hid it.
So we found out November 7th, the prosecution, we went into the judge's chambers and the prosecution said, we identified Jump Kick Man, and the prosecution threw a fit a little bit. They didn't want us to interview him. They were like, well, he's a victim, and didn't want my investigators or my attorneys to interview him or ask him questions. They just wanted to do it private, non-recorded, and the judge said, no, it's going to be recorded. And then a couple hours later, they say, oh, he asked for immunity, and we're not going to give it to him, so we're not going to be calling him as a witness.
Yeah, well, probably didn't want to talk about his criminal record.
Yeah.
So you're running, trying to get to the police lines. You see the mob coming after you. Let's execute him, they're saying. And then out of nowhere, you get dropped to the ground by the guy who kicks you in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see him coming?
I did. To backtrack a little bit, actually, as I'm running, Gage Grosskreutz came up to me with his phone and put it in my face, and he said, what are you doing? Did you just shoot that man? And I told him, I'm going to the police. And he said, oh, okay, and ran off, and I kept running to get to the police. And that's when Anthony Huber strikes me with the skateboard as I'm running before I'm on the ground for the first time. And then I'm hit with a rock by somebody in a white tank top, and that's how I end up on the ground. And I have four people around me from what I remember. And I move my firearm in the direction, and they back off with their hands up so I don't shoot them. And then Jump Kick Man keeps coming, and that's when I fire two shots at Jump Kick Man.
Wow. And you miss him, and he kicks you?
Yes.
Then what happens?
After Jump Kick Man is running off, Anthony Huber comes up, and he grabs the barrel of my gun, and then he hits me with his skateboard holding his trucks, and that's when I shoot him one time.
Where did he hit you with the skateboard?
He hit me in the back of the head, in the neck, the back of the head towards the neckline.
Did you think you were going to be killed at that point?
I did.
Then what happens?
And then after Mr. Huber attacks me, Mr. Grosskreutz puts his hands up. And then I have my rifle pointed in his direction for about a second. And then once I lower my rifle, I noticed that my ejection port is opened about an inch. And Mr. Grosskreutz said I pulled the charging handle, which never happened. I hit the forward assist to close the ejection port. And he sees me doing that or something. And this time he runs at me and he has his gun pointed directly at my head.
Did you see the gun?
I did.
What, do you think he was going to shoot you?
I did. He had it pointed directly at my head, and that's when I shoot him one time. And he is no longer a threat to me at that point because he ran off after I fired that shot.
Did you realize you'd hit him?
I didn't know until later.
So then what happens?
There is a person directly in front of me, and I point my rifle in their direction, and he puts his hands up, and he's backing up. And I then turn around, start going to the police, and then I hear shots behind me, and I turn around and briefly raise my rifle to see if I'm being shot at. And then I realize I can't see who's shooting at me, so then I turn around and go back to the police car, towards the police line.
It's just, hearing this, it's just hard to believe this is happening in an American city.
Yeah.
So then you finally get up, you hear shots, you turn to see who's shooting at you, and then you finally make it to the police line.
Yes. Once I make it to the police cruiser, the police officer says, get back, get back, get back. One of them has a gun out and the other has pepper spray pointed at me. And I say, hey, I just had to shoot somebody. I just had to shoot somebody. And then they say, go home. And I didn't know this until...
Go home?
Yeah. The officer said to go home. I don't think he knew what happened or heard me. There's a lot of chaos going on.
Yes.
But apparently he pepper sprayed me. You can see it in the video, but I don't remember being pepper sprayed by him.
So then what happened?
I say, okay, I go back to the car source. Lot number two, we've been referring to them. Car source one is the one that got burnt down. Car source two is the one that I was at primarily the entire night. And car source three is the one where I was attacked by Mr. Rosenbaum. I go back to car source lot number two, and I tell everybody there what happened. I said I had to do it. I was just attacked. I was dizzy. I was vomiting. I couldn't breathe. And I was like, I wanted to turn myself in Kenosha. I wanted to turn myself into the police in Kenosha, but I wasn't able to because they weren't accepting visitors apparently with the barricades and the fence up. So we ended up turning myself into the Antioch Police Department.
So you drove back across state lines, as we're now calling it.
Funny,
you couldn't even turn yourself in.
No, it was like I had to go to Antioch Police Department, which, to my understanding, is the closest police department to Kenosha.
Why do you think people were burning car source? What does that have to do with civil rights?
I don't know. I think it was opportunists taking advantage of the BLM movement. I agree with the BLM movement. I agree everybody has the right to protest and assemble, but I do not agree that people have the right to burn down. I don't appreciate that people are burning down American cities to try to spread their message. I think there's other ways to go around and do that.
I agree with that completely. So you turn yourself into Antioch Police. What do you think is going to happen at that point to you?
I didn't know. I was in shock. My head was spinning from being hit in the head multiple times. I had some minor injuries. I just didn't know. I didn't know I was going to be arrested for defending myself because everything was on video. But part of the reason I think I was arrested is because of the mob mentality. And they were like, we're just going to arrest him, even though there was videos already out showing me being attacked and having to defend myself.
So when was it that you were arrested?
I was arrested on August 25th at around 6 a.m. I was formally arrested without a criminal complaint being grafted. They didn't know what they were charging me with yet. They just arrested me.
At home?
At Antioch Police Department.
What'd your parents say when you called them and told them what had happened?
I didn't call my mom after I saw her, and she was in shock. She was like, she wanted to go into hiding, and I said, no, the right thing to do would be to turn myself in. I didn't do anything wrong.
So you knew that from the very beginning?
I knew that. A lot of people are like, oh, Kyle had time to meet with his attorneys to come up with this amazing defense of self-defense. No, that's not the case. This has been 100% self-defense from the beginning. And I didn't know there was 100 cameras. I did know I was attacked and I defended myself.
What do you think would have happened to you if there hadn't been the amount of video that there is?
I can't even imagine. I don't think we'd be sitting here right now having this talk, Tucker.
That's for sure. You'd never get out. Rittenhouse knows perfectly well the only reason he's free is because he can prove what actually happened thanks to those videos, but it didn't prevent him from going to jail anyway. He did for a longer period than most people understand. During that time, he picked up a couple of attorneys who said they would help him. In his view, they badly abused him and his family and their trust. I'll tell you a lot about that in just a minute, and about the prosecutors. Also, a programming note, we had cameras behind the scenes throughout much of the...
There's another four-minute segment there on that where I didn't put it in here. I didn't upload it. But from the time he was arrested until, I think it was like November, he went like 2.5-3 months, no shower. They wouldn't let him bathe. He was isolated from the general population. I don't think that he said that it was kind of like a one-star hotel room. But there was no running water. He had a TV, had a bed, had a toilet. Not running water, but there was no shower. There was no shower facilities there, and they didn't let him take one for almost 2 months. Now, the media poop storm over Kyle Rittenhouse from the minute the news break that this kid apparently, according to individuals with tactical gun fighting experience, he did everything right. Every behavior he engaged in, every response that he engaged in when he was threatened or faced with a potential threat was spot on. It was correct. And everyone on the left, from the President of the United States, the occupant in chief, President asterisk, through the news media, celebrities, I want you to stop and think for a moment, how many of these people are on film or on audio saying that this kid was a white supremacist? Joe Biden called him a white supremacist and still hasn't walked it back. If you guys thought Nick Sandman made money, stand back. I hope he sues every single one of these SOBs. I hope that every one of them has to settle and own what they said. And I hope that he sues the President of the United States. I really do. The evidence is overwhelming. These people libeled and slandered this kid. They knew, most likely. Well, of course, they hoped that, you know, whatever they said would turn out to be true. And they weren't worried really too much about whether or not it wouldn't turn out to be true, because my suspicion, it may be different in this case. It was certainly different in Nick Sandman's case. But every other time these guys are caught in lies, or they're caught ginning up stories, or they're caught shaping a narrative, or, you know, otherwise manipulative yellow journalism, they just shrug their shoulders and say, well, that was the information we had at the time. They shuffle some papers and stare off idly into space. Probably not this time. And I hope that's the case. Again, as I said, you know, the evidence is incontrovertible. It's overwhelming. These people slandered this boy. And another thing that bothers you, so for all these months, practically almost a year now, over a year, they've screamed white supremacist murderer, jackbooted Hitler youth thug, you Nazi bastard. I mean, whatever they could think of, whatever they could think of to say about this kid and malign his character, they did. And they were wrong. Again, like I said, I think they probably knew they were wrong and just didn't care. But it's so egregious. It's so heinous. It's so out there. Not dead air. I'm just thinking about the boy's going to make some money, and by God, he should. He has suffered. No reason Where's he going to get his name? How's he going to get his name back? There are going to be people the rest of that kid's life that see him as a murderer, as a thug, as a racist. And he's none of those things. They're going to see him as all these terrible, evil things, and he's not any of them. It's heartbreaking. 2 days later in Waukesha, Wisconsin, Daryl Brooks, a black man, a rapper with sympathies towards BLM and hating white people, jumped in his SUV, drove through a crowd at a Christmas parade on Sunday evening, killed kids, killed grown-ups, injured about 40 or 50 people. Are they calling it terrorism? No. But you can bet your ass those people were terrified seeing that SUV barreling down on them. They're not calling it an act of terrorism. But it is. It's domestic terrorism all the way. They're not talking about the connection between him and his sympathies for BLM. They're not talking, you know, what? Oh, well, he had a fight with his girlfriend, and he was ticked off over that, so he decided that he would just, you know, run over a bunch of white people. Not terrorism. Probably a bad thing, but not terrorism. And what's worse? Not that you can really compare them, because, I mean, it's kind of like an apples and oranges thing. What's worse, and which way did the media go? And they're still not talking about it. And they won't. We'll talk about it. And places like Breitbart or American Spectator or American Thinker, conservative trios. Yeah, we'll talk about it there. One American News will probably talk about it, but CNN's not going to. ABC, NBC, PBS, now you can forget about it. They're not going to either. Not a chance, man. I think if we look at the doctrine of projection, the psychological definition of projection, which is, you know, you assign to your enemy or that person who, you know, has the, you know, you want to direct your ire at, you basically, it's the psychological mechanism of assigning whatever your faults are, whatever those things are that you hate in yourself, to another person or another party. And that's what that's what the left does, and they do it all the time. They talk about conservatives being Nazis. That's a big one. They love to throw that one around. You ever notice they never call anybody a commie? The left never calls anybody a commie. They never call a Republican a communist. Not once. You'll never hear them do it. You know why? Because they're okay with communism. Dennis Prager, if I can find that. Dennis Prager did something on that a few years ago that was really, really thought-provoking and insightful. And let me see if I can find that thing. Here's P. Psaki. I hate that chick, man. Well, I don't hate her. You know, she's just so phony. I'm not going to say. But if you notice that, it's always Nazis. Donald Trump was a Nazi. George Bush was a Nazi. Ronald Reagan was a Nazi. I don't guess Gerald Ford was in there long enough to do too many Nazi things. So he didn't catch any of that. But they never say communism. No, I don't know why, but they don't. Well, I do know why, because that's their stuff, and they're not gonna hate communism like Nazism. I found it. Here it is. Dennis Prager. Again, this is from a couple years ago, but it's still worth listening to.
When people describe particularly evil individuals or regimes, why is it that they use the terms Nazi or fascist, but almost never communist? Given the unparalleled amount of human suffering communists have caused, why is communist so much less a term of revulsion than Nazi? Communists killed 70 million people in China, more than 20 million people in the Soviet Union, not including about 5 million Ukrainians, and almost one out of every three Cambodians. And communists enslaved entire nations in Russia, Vietnam, China, Eastern Europe, North Korea, Cuba, and much of Central Asia. They ruined the lives of well over a billion people. So why doesn't communism have the same terrible reputation as Nazism? Reason number one, there is, simply put, widespread ignorance of the communist record. Whereas both right and left loathe Nazism and teach its evil history, the left, and I'm talking about the left, not traditional liberals like Harry Truman or John F. Kennedy, has never loathed communism. And since the left dominates academia, almost no one teaches communism's evil history. Reason number two, the Nazis carried out the Holocaust. Nothing matches the Holocaust for pure evil. The rounding up of virtually every Jewish man, woman, child, and baby on the European continent and sending them to die is unprecedented and unparalleled. The communists killed far more people than the Nazis, but never matched the Holocaust in the systemization of genocide. The uniqueness of the Holocaust and the enormous attention rightly paid to it have helped ensure that Nazism has a worse name than communism. Reason number three, communism is based on nice-sounding theories. Nazism isn't. It's based on heinous-sounding theories. Intellectuals in general, including, of course, the intellectuals who write history, are seduced by words, so much so that they deem actions as less significant than words. For that reason, they haven't focused nearly as much attention on the horrific actions of communists as they have on the horrific actions of the Nazis. They dismiss the evils of communists as perversions of true communism. But they regard Nazi atrocities, correctly, as the logical and inevitable results of Nazism. Reason number four. Germans have thoroughly exposed the evils of Nazism, have taken responsibility for them, and have attempted to atone for them. Russians have not done anything similar regarding Lenin's or Stalin's horrors. To the contrary, Lenin, the father of Soviet communism, is still widely venerated in Russia. And as regards Stalin, as University of London Russian historian Donald Rayfield puts it, quote, people still deny, by assertion or implication, Stalin's Holocaust, unquote. Even less so has China exposed the greatest mass murderer and enslaver of them all, Mao Zedong. Mao remains revered in China. Every Chinese currency note has his picture on it. Until Russia and China and Vietnam and Cuba and North Korea acknowledge the evils their countries committed under communism, communism's evils will remain less known than the evils of the German state under Hitler. Reason number five, communists murdered mostly their own people. The Nazis, on the other hand, killed very few fellow Germans. World opinion, that largely meaningless and amoral term, deems the murder of members of one's own group far less noteworthy than the murder of outsiders. That's why, for example, blacks killing millions of fellow blacks in Africa elicits almost no attention from world opinion. And reason number six, in the view of the left, the last good war was World War II. The war against German Nazism and Japanese fascism. The left does not regard wars against communist regimes as good wars. For example, the American war against Vietnamese communism is regarded as immoral, and the war against Korean communism and its Chinese communist backers is simply ignored. Until the left and all the institutions influenced by the left acknowledge how evil communism has been, we will continue to live in a morally confused world. In the meantime, All good people owe it to the victims of communism to learn what happened to them. Even worse than being murdered or enslaved is a world that doesn't even know that you were. I'm Dennis Prager. To keep our videos free, click here.
Thanks, Dennis. I am the product of late 1970s, early 1980s, junior college, community junior college. It was called Beckley College. It doesn't exist anymore. It hadn't existed for a long time, but once upon a time it was there, and it was pretty cool. And my dad was an instructor there. My mom taught English there at night school. My brother, a bunch of crazy ass teachers, man. I could not get away from it. I tried. Anyway, the American university system, college and university system, as it exists today, I think is they're no longer centers of education, but rather centers of indoctrination. These kids are taught what to think, not how to think. And the reason they don't call us communists is because they like communism. The academics, the people that are running our government now, they love collectivism, all right? They love central planning. They abhor and fear and hate our Constitution, because it is our Constitution, that document, that one, and it is not a living, breathing document. It is remarkably flexible and resilient, but it is not living and breathing. It means what it says. Look at the left. Look how much about totalitarianism. They're all about totalitarianism. They're all about authoritarianism. And they're all about maintaining and protecting that authoritarianism through the use of violence, through the use of threats, through cancel culture, through doxing. Terrorism, directed targeted terrorism, political terrorism. The left is good at it. For the left, violence and terror are they're just other examples of political theater, and they use it fairly effectively. And I think that's all the time we've got for this evening. I'm going to go ahead and cut it off here. I want to thank you guys tremendously for tuning in and listening tonight. You got to hear some great stuff in the first segment of the show. Once again, endless thanks to Judge Hal Morose for spending the time that he did with us and imparting some of his wisdom this evening. We're going to have him back some more. And again, we're going to have Claire on. We're going to have Trevor. We're going to get some... Got to get some information going in here, man, and informed and disseminating electorate is what will make all the difference. And these are people who can help make that electorate and informed and disseminating one. Heard live here Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Patriot Nation Radio. Tomorrow night coming up, we've got hold on a minute. I'm blacking out. I'm sorry. We have the American Allegiance show with Kevin White. And Kevin is straight up killing it. An outstanding radio host in a very short amount of time in his own right. Outstanding guests, terrific subjects. compelling, informative, and entertaining radio. And it's right here on Patriot Nation Radio. That's all the time we got, folks. I'm going to go ahead and shut it off. I'm about out of gas. Been a long day. Had a week off last week. And now, and with the kids that I work with, a remarkable group of kids, tomorrow's December 1st. So we are officially ball bearings to the wall in Christmas. And it's just getting worse. I'm going to be completely Buddy the Elfed out by the 15th. I can guarantee it. But I wouldn't have it any other way. God bless you. God bless America. We'll be back here on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. We'll see you then. You guys take good care.